ain't done yet.
Hey, what's up? What's going on? This is Matthew Kirby, host of the Dear Fathers Podcast, and we're back for another episode.
And what's good, everybody? It's Jesse Alex, the co-founder of Dear Fathers, also your co-host of the Dear Fathers Podcast, and y'all already know we're the premier media platform for Black fatherhood.
Get ready for another episode in 3, 2, 1.
Represent the house like Congress. You ain't known unless your whole team on. Nigga sounds for the family.
Hey everybody, what's up? This is Baron Davis. You're rocking with Dear Fathers, the premier media platform for Black fatherhood. This episode is sponsored by my company, You Wish and Black Santa, a company where we believe that giving has no season. You wish it, you dream it, and it will come true. No, I can't miss my
What's up? What's going on? Welcome back, y'all, to another episode, another week, another conversation to the Dear Fathers Podcast. Hey, I just want to let you all know, man, and I say this almost every week, I am extremely excited to be talking to today's amazing guest. So look, y'all, I'm not going to waste no more time. Let's just jump right into it. Welcome super hilarious comedian, actor, and one third of the 85 South. So Chico Bean to the Dear Fathers Podcast. Chico, what's going on, man? How you feeling?
Man, you know, I'm living life, man. Nothing major, man. It's glad to talk to you guys today.
Yes, sir. Hey, I hope you're staying safe out there, man. I see you on the road and everything. Don't be living life.
Most
on the
definitely.
Edge.
Nah, man. You see, I'm in the car, out the car. I got my mask over there on the seat. I ain't messing around, man. It's too dangerous out here. Sneezing is a felony now, so you got to make sure you keep that on the low.
Yes, sir. Come on with it. Jesse, how you doing, man? How you feeling?
Man, as always, I'm excited to have this conversation with Chico, man. Just being that I'm a person that loves to laugh, and he's somebody who's made me do that, you know, through his various platforms and the things that he's doing in his career. And then also just getting to open up and dive deep with him about who he is as a Black man and a father outside of those things. I'm excited and hoping it's going to be a therapeutic conversation as always for me.
Yes, sir. Well, shoot, y'all know how we do, man. Let's just jump right into it. But before we get to the meat and potatoes, Chico, man, I just want to check in with you, man. How you holding up, man? You know, it's been a long year dealing with Corona in 2020. How you holding up, man?
Hey, man, this is how I'm holding up. This is how I'm living.
Oh, man, right, it's weird seeing the whole head of hair. Chico.
The whole, that's how I'm living, man. It's a reflection of this year. And that's a big reason why I did it, is because to me, this year was a year of reflection to me, you know. And I think that when most people talk about reflection, they miss the most important part of what that means. What you see in the mirror, the most important thing is what you think of yourself. And this was just an example of me saying, you know what? No matter what happens, at my lowest, whatever people may call this, with my head, you know, growing out in regards to what the public may see, as long as I'm able to look at myself and be excited about what I see in the mirror, that's all that counts. So me just doing this is using that energy to project that out to the people who support me and everything, because this year was rough on a lot of people. So I just wanted to use my platform to be able to give people some hope from me, you know, utilizing the things that I've been through in my life to make me the person that I am and try to give some of that energy off if I could.
Absolutely, man. And I tell you what, it's been a hell of a year, man. So reflection, hey, I'm with you all the way. I mean, hell, we in the house. Most of us should be in the house, at least. I don't know about Atlanta and a couple other places. But anyways, most of us that follow the rules should be in the house and just really thinking about life, thinking about the next steps, thinking about how we're going to rebound and bounce from this whole COVID thing if whenever it ends. You know, I already know they got vaccines and whatnot. I'm not going to be first in line, but at least they working on it. But just thinking about, you know, for folks who are living under a rock and with everything that you have done in your career, just being that comedian, how have you adjusted to everything that's happening with the Rona? You've been doing Zoom shows, and what you been doing, man?
No, I haven't done any Zoom show. Actually, I'm lying. I just did a Zoom show yesterday with a brother named Tahir Moore. He has a show called Zooming with the Homies. And it's just something that, you know, just comedians get together and, you know, chop it up on Zoom. But I haven't done any like official comedy shows with the Zooming, because, you know, I didn't, you know, that's not really my thing. You know what I'm saying? Right. And I didn't want to I wasn't in need to do it. You know what I mean? I don't have anything against anybody who is doing it, but I just believe in not forcing anything. You know what I'm saying? So I just have been blessed enough to be in a position to be able to take this time to regroup and utilize this newfound time that none of us ever thought would be possible that we would receive to just, you know, build myself up and continue to pour into the most important vessel, which is me and my spirit and my soul. So I have been, you know, just utilizing the time to build and regroup with my partners. You know, you see, we with the 85 South show, we took it back to in studio, you know, because we was running crazy with the live shows. And then, you know, the world shut down and we had to regroup. So just rebuilding and building, you know, and seeing how far our infrastructure has came, you know, this year, and myself being able to pull back into me and just mental stability, the time with my daughter that I would have, that's the greatest gift that the coronavirus has given me, is the fact that, you know, I've been on the road consistently now for about, I say, four or five years. And that time is missed by her. And she suffers the most in regards to the, you know, parts of my career that most people don't understand, that I understand, but she is the person that suffers the most in regards to, she misses time with her father. So this time that I got to be home, which I haven't been home consistently in 5 years, you know, I mean, it'd be off and on. And I made sure that she got whatever time that I had when I was free, but being able to just sit down and have her with me was a blessing, because people say if you go into the corona and didn't come out with a new skill or a better person, and I agree with that, because this definitely made me a better father. I thought I was a good father already, but this definitely showed me that there's always room for improvement.
Yes, sir. And I hear you and feel you on that, man. And just even just thinking about, man, I know you've been going for a couple of years. But look, it's kind of weird to say, it's kind of crazy to say, but not everybody know who you are, Chico. I don't know why, but not everybody know who you are. So let's take it back just for a little bit. So when we think about your career, you know, what motivated you to start in comedy? And then also tell us more about how'd you get that name, Chico Bean? Where'd that come from?
Well, first, what got me motivated to start in comedy, I'm from Washington, D.C., born and raised in Washington, D.C. And my father, you know, ironically, was murdered when I was 2 years old. Mm-hmm. So I grew up without a father. But unlike a lot of other people and other families, I didn't come from a family where that was something that was kept from me. I was, you know, my family different, just to give it a small description. So I've always had male responsibility, the responsibility of a man, you know what I'm saying? So I've always had to go out and do things for myself my whole life. My mother's theory was, I'm responsible for what you need. What you want is on you. And not having a father motivated me in ways that it motivates everybody else who grew up without one. But I think a little differently, because I wasn't kept away from the reality of him being dead. I had a situation when I was young. I think I was about 5 years old. You had to do the little assignments where you draw your life up into that point. And I had got to the point where my father died and I drew it, no problem. You know what I'm saying? It was easy for me to do. Then I had one of them come from one of them houses where all my family lived in the same house. So it was always jumping. So I came downstairs and they was having one of their little gatherings. And then I, you know, I'm showing my mama what I did. And they was like, present it. Show us how you're going to present it in school. So I go through my whole little spiel, and then I get to the point where my father passed away on my, you know, card, and then I just start crying. I don't know why I start. I remember this like it was yesterday. I don't know why I start crying or what caused me to cry, but I just cried, and everybody kind of just stood there and looked at me, and then it was like, you done? Okay, well, I'm going to let you know. Your father dead, and he going to be dead forever. He never coming back. No matter what you do in life, he ain't going to never be there, baby. So if you're going to cry, you better get used to crying, because you ain't going to never be able to not cry. But do you look around you and see anything but love in front of you? No. Why? You worry about what's in front of you. Don't worry about what you can't control. And this is when I'm 5 years old. So from that point on, I never really had any problems with the fact that my father wasn't going to be around, or was never going. I was never going to get a chance to meet him, or he had never seen me play basketball or none of that. I just knew that that's just what my life was. So me going out and doing those things early and having those responsibilities early always made me fearless, you know, and not afraid of what I needed to do without the guidance. I knew I had to figure it out on my own. So by the time I got, you know, of age, you know, I've been blessed as well. I had uncles, you know, and guys in my family, you know, I mean, older cousins and things of that nature that helped show me what a man was and how to be a man. And unfortunately, in my environment, you know, where I grew up, I've lost a lot of those guys the same way. Like my Uncle Reggie was like my father. I don't remember my father getting murdered, but he was murdered in 2002. And I remember that one, you know what I'm saying? So it was like me losing my father again, because he was the most consistent male that I got the examples from throughout my life, good and bad. So when he was killed, it scared me. And at that point, I just was doing what I thought I was supposed to do. I've been blessed to always be good at the things that I chose to do, whether it was negative or positive. So I was just doing what I thought was cool, and being in the street is something that I thought was cool. So I was always outside doing what we do when we outside. And when he lost his life, it spooked me so bad that I said, okay, it was a reality check. Like, because he was a superhero to me. Like, he got all the respect in the world. One of the most, you know, everything you can think of about a dude in our environment, he was that. And for him to get killed the way he did, it made me realize, because I knew he was 100 times tougher than I ever be. So I'm like, nah, I got to do something different. Because if that can happen to him, I know what's going to happen. Either I'm going to have to do that to somebody consistently and go to jail for the rest of my life, or somebody going to do it to me. So I just needed to change the odds a little bit. So I decided to, you know, I took some money and went on a college tour. And went to North Carolina, where I still live now, to a school called Winston-Salem State. Saw 20 girls before I saw one dude and was like, this ain't that bad. I might be able to pull this one off. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, look, I ain't going to pick on you too much, man. I'm going to show them Rams some love. I went to A&T. And I'm from North Carolina, so yes, sir. Oh, you know, okay. Down well, the street,
to y'all, man. You know, I got a lot of love for Aggie. Salute to my brother Darren Brand and Osama. Osama been drinking. You know, what I mean, that's my partners. They all Aggies. You know, my man drank. So I got a lot of love for A&T, man. A&T is one of the first schools that showed me love when I started to get recognition. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
So salute to y'all. But back to what I was saying, I went to Winston-Salem State. End up going to Winston-Salem State, and I went to school for 5 years and graduated. And, you know, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, because my major was communications, radio, television, with a minor in psychology and sociology. So I'm like, I'm thinking I'm going to get a job at the news station where I did my internship at WXI 12. And I went to get a job, and they was like, you're going to be making $6.25 an hour part-time. And I said, no, I'm not. Because I figured if I'm going to be poor and struggling, I'd much rather be poor and struggling, building my own legacy, than helping somebody else build theirs and hoping they recognize my efforts. You know what I'm saying? And I've always been a hustler. I've always been responsible for getting the things that I want. So I was just like, I got to regroup and figure out what I want to do. I go home to D.C. and I had never been to my father's gravesite before this time in my life. I never went. So, and it wasn't anything that I no special occasion or nothing like that. It just was something that I decided I wanted to do one day. So I went home and I told my mom, you know, I'm going to visit my father's grave. And she was cool. Like, okay, baby, we'll just, you know, do your thing. And I go to the gravesite, you know what I mean? I got a lot of people. It's a cemetery right outside the DC area called Harmony Cemetery. And I got a lot of family that's buried out there, a lot of friends that's buried out there. So I went to say my piece to those people. And then the lady took me over to where, you know, my father was buried. It's like an older side of the graveyard, because, you know, he died late 80s. So when she took me over there, she took me like to just some grass and was like, yeah, from the chart, he in this area somewhere. And my first thought was, damn, I hope I'm great. Put these flowers on the right person, because this would be real awkward if I don't. This is crazy, because I've already been accepting of the fact that, you know, I'm not upset about the fact that he's gone. I'm used to it. But that reality was like a shock to me, because it was like, damn, Slim, whatever you had done in your life up until that point hadn't been enough for you to garner a marker to let the world know that you existed. And that's no knock to who he was as a person, but that just means that his life was cut short prior to that being able to happen. And not only that, nobody around him had the means to be able to make that happen. So I was just, at that point, I realized it motivated me more. I'm like, I got to do something now. I can't go out like a patch of grass. I can't be a patch of grass. I got to leave something, because I'm his legacy on the planet. So I felt like at that moment, I just got a different responsibility, and it kind of clicked in my head up until that point why my life was the way it was, why I had all the responsibility, and why things looked the way they looked for me. It kind of was a moment of clarity in that sense. So I went home and took my mom this paper that they gave me at the cemetery. I gave it to her, and she immediately just lost it, started crying. And I'm like, damn, you know what I mean? And then my mama not the type of person to cry. Like, she's thorough. So I was shocked that she still had that level of passion 21 years later. You know what I'm saying? And I said to myself, that proves that this person that's in the ground, wherever he was at, was a hell of a dude to still have that much passion left in somebody after all these years of him being gone. And I got that. So the fact that he wasn't able to utilize it, I felt even more at that point, I got to do something. I got to use this because I've always been special, but I never really applied it knowing that, you know, I could use that energy. So I go back to North Carolina, still trying to figure it out. And my boy Jerome, God bless him, he was like, man, you should do comedy. You should do comedy. And I'm thinking like, I ain't never even been to a comedy club. I'm a comedy fan, but not doing no comedy. And I hosted a lot of the stuff in school. You know, I'm an alpha. I'm a member of Alpha Phi Alpha. So I would host all our pageants and the block parties and the step shows and stuff like that. But I never really put two and two together that that's what I was doing. So he was like, I'm telling you, man, you need to do comedy. You need to do comedy. So in Greensboro, as you may know, it's a comedy club called the Comedy Zone right across from a club called Arizona Pete's. And they did an open mic night every first and second Thursday of the month.
Yes, sir.
So the first Thursday I went and I just watched. And I watched one of the most amazingly horrible shows you'll ever see in your life. But it was like, well, I know I can at least do that bad. You know what I'm saying? So the next week, that Thursday, I went on stage. I did 4 minutes on stage, right? It felt like an hour, but I did 4 minutes on stage. And it may sound cliche, but when I walked off the stage and my feet hit the floor, I was like, this it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I've been doing it ever since that day. And to answer your second question, where did I get the name Chico Bean? My boy B-Dat, which is my brother from FFCS, also out of North Carolina. He's a Ram. But, you know, we linked up and started our movement down there. He was telling me I needed to get on Twitter. And I didn't have a Twitter for the longest time. I was late on Twitter. So he was like, man, you got to get a Twitter. You got to get a Twitter. This is pre-Instagram. But I was like, man, I'm good. He was like, nah, you got to have one, bro. I'm telling you. So I'm putting in to make the Twitter. And every name that I put in was taken already. I'm like, nigga, I think I do got a Twitter because ain't no name that I'm putting in working. So he was like, nah, I got to be something creative. It got to be something different. So Bean is my real last name. My name is Anthony Bean. And Chico is a nickname that I was given when I was a little boy by my uncles. Like I said, my uncles were my biggest influence. So they, you know, and they was fly guys in the street. So they would get ready to go to the club and they would put on their Versace short sets and their ostrich loafers and the jewelry. And I would go wanting to run behind them all the time. I went and put my Oshkosh Pigage little jumpsuit on and my penny loafers. And I come outside and, you know, walk around and model and do my poses. And they be like, oh, there you go, little Chico. They be like, you know, you dress like you work at the laundromat. You know what I'm saying? So that was just a joke. It was a joke that they would say about me. But I was so happy to be around them that that was just something that meant so much to me. So I was like, in that moment, as I'm creating a Twitter, I was like, okay, Chico, that's a nickname from childhood. Bean is my real last name. Chico Bean. That's how it started.
It's funny how little nicknames and things like that stick, man. I can't even hold you, man. I feel like when I was looking at everything, when I was researching you, man, I was like, I feel like this probably going to be a nickname or something that stuck, man. And it's just crazy how
things like that happen, man. I got a bunch of them.
You said you got a bunch of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a bunch of them.
All right. I hear you on that. But look, like, so just thinking about this. So every time I think about a comedian, whether we spoke to him on this platform or just in general, like most people, you know, most people will kind of assume that those people who are comedians now were like class clowns or something growing up like that. Was that the case for you, or were you kind of late to comedy like you were kind of late to Twitter?
Nah, I wasn't the class clown. I was always very popular, but I was all about getting some money. That was my thing. Because like I said, I didn't have anybody to do the things for me that I wanted to have done. So if I wanted the Jordans, I had to pay for them. And if I wanted to, and once you get used to doing that, you know what I mean? It becomes a habit. I tell people all the time, once you get used to hustling, you won't hustle. You know what I'm saying? And I started working when I was 9 years old at the barbershop as a brush boy, brushing people off for dollars when they got up out the chair, you know, at Bluebird's Barbershop, Georgia Avenue in Washington, D.C., And I've been working ever since, to get my own money since I was 9 years old, literally. So by the time I got to high school, that's what it was. Well, it was with me. Now, mind you, I was always funny to the people that I was around, and people always knew me because I just was one of the guys that always, I've been popular, you know, every school that I've ever went to. So You know, it wasn't that I needed to do anything extra. It was just like, I said, I've always been special for some reason. Just being me was always enough for me to be recognized.
Nah, that's dope. And then even for you to kind of just realize that at an early age and then kind of see how it's taking you in your career. And it's kind of crazy, man, because you be on Wild and Out with everybody else. So I'm from St. Louis. I grew up with Hitman, Lil Jerk.
That's my brother, yeah.
Like, dog, like, what you saying now is kind of relatable to what I thought about Hitman, like, growing up. You could tell he was just always special. Like, he was coded football, basketball, like, rapping. And we played on the same AAU team together. And, like, just to see him, like, take that specialness and that, like, I don't even know what to call it, but, like, just take that and manifest it into something that's, like, greater is super dope to watch. And what you saying kind of reminds me of that. And it's crazy how y'all both on Wild and Out and y'all both doing y'all thing. So, salute to him. Yeah, it's super dope.
I like to call it the glow. You know, I don't know if you ever seen the movie Last Dragon, but that's my favorite movie, man, of all time. If there's anybody that I would ever want to meet, it would be Berry Gordy, just so I can shake his hand and say thank you for all the game you put in that movie, because he gave us the game in that movie, man. It's like the way that it was set up is you got whatever it is within you is already there. All you have to do is accept it and project it out. And a lot of it, we don't even know that we have. We just have it. But at some point, you have to recognize that you have it and start to apply that so it can grow bigger, so your glow can grow greater. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's what that movie taught us. Like, it was like he went through this whole journey to find out who the master was, and just to realize that he was always the master the whole time. So it's just those people who have that. Unfortunately, a lot of us either are cut down before we get the shot or are afraid of the failure that comes with doing those things. Because if you watch The Last Dragon, he failed all the way up till he got his head dunked in the water. Sure enough, was beating the dog shit out of Bruce Leroy. But he failed the whole journey. But once he realized it and realized, oh, shit, it's me, he started to apply it, and it wasn't nothing nobody could do with him. So, you know, that's just really, really the way that it works. You know, we all know those people. I know a bunch of people who were always special, but for some reason, they just got trapped or tripped up and couldn't get back up or whatever it may be. So that's why I always feel it's my responsibility to stay on course with what I believe in and who I am and not be worried about nothing else, because that glow is only going to grow if I apply what I have within me and what God gives me to do so.
And I think a lot of times it's your mental, right? Like, it's mental blocks. A lot of times we get in our own way of the glow. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a lot of times people got what you call the glow is they're blocking themselves from whatever, you know, they could potentially manifest by their own fear, their own hurdles that they're trying to get through, man. So it's dope to hear you talk about it, and just the gems that you dropped already. So tell us a little bit more about Cheat Code and, like, why you started it, the meaning behind it, and, like, did you already – I mean, I know the answer to this because you said hustling has always been your thing, but, like, after the you know, being a comedian, like, what made you gravitate towards doing something like this? It just kind of came naturally, or, like, what kind of put you in position to start that brand?
That's just, you know, it's like – you know, it's a play on words, like the cheat code. You know, when you got the cheat code on Grand Theft Auto, nigga, you can get a rocket launcher. You know what I mean? It's like the mental ability of every person is what is going to drive your life. Because I say all the time, the most consistent thing that's going to happen to you while you alive is your brain going to talk inside your brain. As we talking right now, our brains is talking inside our brain. So you got to learn how to manage that. And the cheat code is just my, you know, various things that I believe in or who I am in all aspects that help me to navigate my brain talking inside my brain. So I try to offer those things to people who, you know, are fans of mine or who watch and support me, because I know that if I can be a vessel to help somebody else, because like I said, a lot of this stuff I had to figure out on my own. I grew up without half of the person who made me. So and going forward, he's never going to be around. So I'm always going to have the responsibility of navigating those things without that person, without the direct influence of why I'm the way I am and why I talk the way I talk and all the little things that people don't account for. So if I can help other people, even if they did have their mother and their father, whatever, whatever your situation may be, if I can help you through the journey that I'm on and the things that I've had to learn, then I'm giving you the cheat code, because it's me, Chico Bean, but it's, you know, cheat codes to life, as I like to think.
Yeah, man, that's pretty solid. And I was just checking out your site and everything, man. And I just feel like you definitely gonna go places where, you know, it's beanies now. You know, who knows what that can evolve into? Who knows? That could be a whole clothing line going.
Yeah, everything is strategic with me, man. I understand the importance and value of time. And one of the most important things in regards to time is me, is making sure you don't move on anybody else's. And, you know, making sure that you have an understanding, an idea, and being self-aware. Self-awareness is very important. So I'm very self-aware, and I know, you know, what I want my legacy to be. And I know that it's a marathon, not a sprint. Longevity is something that it takes calculated thinking, luck, blessings, and just staying on course. You know, to be as simplistic as possible. So me, I've always, even though I could have did a lot of stuff, I wanted to make sense and to me. And if it makes sense to me, it's got to make sense to everybody else, because it's me that's doing it.
No, for sure, man. And even, right. I mean, we're a few questions in, man. And I just want to stop and thank you for all the gems that you've given so far, because it's super therapeutic to me just to hear you open up about these things and talk about your journey. And just thinking about, you know, one of like your most recent accomplishments with the 85 South show, you guys were, you know, selected to be the host of the Hip Hop Award. Kind of talk to us about that experience, man. Like, what did that feel like? Like, you know, how did that make y'all feel just being selected to be the host of the Hip Hop Award?
It was dope, man. You know, I mean, BET Hip Hop Awards. This is something I watched when I was sitting in the living room in my mama's house. You know what I mean? In the hood. Like, And that's, you can't even, you know, explain what it feel like. And then not only were we able to do it, we were able to do it. Like, I'm looking to the left and I see my partners, my brothers, you know what I'm saying? Like, guys that we had nothing, trying to make something, and here we are. You know, it was a great feeling. It was an amazing feeling, because, you know, I don't ever answer the question, what's next? My answer is always whatever's next. Because trying to put a definition on what you are going to do for people who don't really have any interest invested in other than just wanting to know can be debilitating to your own mental space. Because I say all the time, if I would have answered the question, what's next, or what do I want to do, in 2013 when I got on Wildin' Out, I probably wouldn't have said, I'm a host of the BET Hip Hop Awards. So sometimes you can limit yourself to what your mind can think of in that moment. And that's, you know, you don't have any control over the things that come. That your blessings have already been established. I believe this. Your blessings are already there for you, and they only yours, and only you can get them. But you have to be as invested in yourself and moving forward and understanding what's yours and not caring about what's going on the left of you or on the right of you, in order for you to receive your blessings, because can't nobody else have them. They're yours. But if you don't get them, they're just going to be out there floating around in nothingness. So I think that at this point, I realize that those type of moments are a shining example to me that my mentality of how things work for me is exactly the way I'm supposed to do it, because I wouldn't have thought to do half of the shit that I have ended up doing if somebody would have said, what's next, when I first got on Wildin' Out. Now, you know, at that point, you know, I still was like, oh, yeah, I want to get some more seasons of Wildin' Out. But all of the things that some of the people who know my name now, some of the people I've been able to meet, some of the experience, a lot of the experience that I have, I wouldn't have even been able to conjure up the thought of some of this stuff. So I don't even force myself to try to think about it. I'm just going to consistently work whatever I'm working on. When the thought comes to my mind, I'm going to invest energy and time into it. If it's something that works, cool. If it's not, cool. But I'm just going to walk my path, and I'm going to receive my blessings, because they already out there waiting for me. I just got to go pick them up.
Yeah, and I agree with that wholeheartedly, man. I say this to my friends and just people all the time, that God will show you glimpses of your potential that you can reach. It's up to us to do the work and have the consistency and in order to reach those things, right? Like, it's up to us to kind of put in the work, be consistent, follow your dreams, do what you're passionate about in order to grab those things that are out there for us. Because he'll show us glimpses of that all the time. Like
every day.
Every day. Like
every single day.
The potential of it all the time. And I say that all the time, that he'll show you the potential. It's just really up to us, really. So I appreciate you for saying that.
Right. Come on, preacher.
Real, man.
Come on,
preacher. Energy is real. You know what I mean? I believe in that. I'm not a religious person, but I mean, I do believe in God and I do believe in the universe. Wholeheartedly, energy is real. And I believe there's two types of people in the world. There's a person, there are people who walk into a room and change the energy, and there's people who leave a room and change the energy. So you can pick which one you want to be, but that's all in how you apply your energy and what you put out there into the world, you're going to receive back. That's something I believe in wholeheartedly. So, you know, you're absolutely right, young brother.
Yeah, appreciate that, man.
Yes, sir.
We ain't even got into the real.
I know, right? I was going to say, look.
Who is Chico?
Who am I as a father? Well, I am a result of all of the things that I've been through up until each day as a father. And what that means is, like I said, I didn't have one growing up. So that motivates me a lot in regards to my fatherhood. And I also had a mother who was very unique in her ways, but I love her for it because it made me who I am and helped make me who I am. You know, she had a bunch of stuff she used to say to me when I was young. And as I started to become a man, you don't realize the importance of those messages until you start to experience them. So I've been blessed to see a lot of things coming because I wasn't raised conventionally. You know, my mama would always say, I can't show you how to be no man, but I'm damn sure going to show you how not to be a bitch. That was her thing. And as a man, now I see the importance in that because you see so much bitch shit going on with men. You know what I mean? And a lot of the times it's because we were coddled and kept away from those realities early in our life. So you get to the real experience and you don't even know that there's other options and ways of dealing with the stuff that you're dealing with. And I've been given that. So as a father, I try to apply all of those things to my daughter. You know what I'm saying? Like, I try to make sure that she doesn't have to deal with things in the same veracity that I had to deal with them when I was coming up. You know what I mean? Because I'm there to be there, to take that relief off of her that I didn't have. Because there's no such thing as not going through anything. You know, the world is going to spin whether you want it or not. But our world is our responsibility. So I try to just make sure that I'm here to help you build your world, baby. And whatever you go through within it, daddy is going to help you with that. And whatever the world give you, I'm going to do all that I can to stand in front of it and block that shit from hitting you because I don't want you to have to get smacked in the face with it like I did.
Yeah, man. And that's so real. I'm even thinking about, you know, just, and I didn't mention this earlier, but I'm a father. I got two kids. So I have a 3-year-old girl. And I know your daughter is a little older than mine. I think she's in the double digits now. And I got
she's 12 years old. 12 years old.
So, oh man, she about ready to drive already. So
oh man, that's my little partner though, man. That's my little partner. She got my she's going to be so much. She's going to be able to do so much more than I will ever be able to do. And that excites me because I look at all the stuff that I'm able to do. And it just excites me that she's going to be able to do all of those things and more. And I'm just glad that I'm able to be there to navigate her through life. You know what I mean? And it's a blessing every day that I'm here because I know what it feels like to never have that connection, you know? And that's why I always tell people, if your father is still alive, no matter how bad the situation may be, man, try to mend it because it's important. Cause I know what it feels like to not have that option. And when you don't have that option, it's tough because you would never be able to, I don't know what this nigga would have thought about me. I don't know what he would have said when I tripped and fell or, you know what I mean? How he would have showed me how to tie my shoes or shoot a basketball or fight or none of that. So if you have the opportunity to run those things back, even if it's in adulthood, if you have enough things to even be able to get that feeling of the nutsack that you came out of, this is who it belongs to. Like, if you got the ability to do that, I advise that because I know as a father, that means so much to my child. Like, when we got to spend all this time together doing, you know, the shutdown and everything, like, the most important thing to me was being able to show her baby, this is why you laugh like and stuff like this. And this is why your mentality when it comes to not wanting to get up in the morning and all of these different things, you get this stuff from your daddy. And being able to have her see me in my natural element and recognize those things on her own, while also being able to see the character and development of my child and who she's turning into as a little woman, is the best feeling in the world, man. Because I know what it feels like to not have that. And I never necessarily went through life desiring it. But now that I have a child and I'm able to do those things, it makes me realize, like, damn, it's a lot that I missed out on in regards to being able to establish character from the person who made me.
Yeah, man. And wholeheartedly, man, I co-sign with you 100%. Yeah. I mentioned this on the show from time to time. You know, I just met my own father about 2 years ago, right, for the first time. And it's one of those things where, you know, I didn't have the desire necessarily, because I really didn't remember him, but he tried to reach out to me and everything, man. It's just worth, at this point, no matter what point in life you are, it's worth getting that relationship, like you said, man. So even from the laughs, the cries, the what I call the isms and the schisms and everything, man, it's just really good to, as a child, for their father, I don't care if it's a boy or a girl, to just have that relationship. And even just thinking about that, you gotta answer this for me. Your daughter laugh at your jokes, or she think you corny?
Do she think, man, my daughter got more jokes than me. Like, she don't have to worry about laughing at me. I'm too busy laughing at her. Like, she's legendary. Already, this hair, man. She told me that my head looked like the you know, when you got like a Facebook and you don't have a picture up, that little logo that be in the window, like that little white symbol. She said my head looked like that. Uh-huh. And I cried laughing. Like, she just, it's so dope because it's so natural. She get it so natural, man. Her little sarcasm and wittiness and all of that, like, we genuinely have fun. And I'm unique in my fatherhood. Like, I learned early, like, ain't no cut cards with me. Like, I understand it. The quicker we establish a relationship based on reality and honesty, the easier it's going to be. And that's something that I respect my mother for. As tough as she was in regards to a lot of the shit that she did, I respect her for that, because she wasn't trying to force herself to be anything other than what she was. And she did what she was supposed to do. She made sure we had food in our stomach, roof over our head, and love. There was no doubt as to whether or not she loved us, but all of the extra stuff that she wasn't required to do, she never forced herself to do those things. And she never hesitated in explaining to us why she wouldn't. And that's the way I applied to my daughter, but it's a whole lot easier because me growing up with it, I know some of the mistakes that she made and some of the things that she could have done better. So I make sure to do those things better with my daughter. But one thing that I don't hesitate on is, I don't care what it is, you can talk to me about anything and everything. I don't care what the situation or what the circumstance. Don't ever be afraid to talk to your father, because I got you no matter what. I'm with you, right or wrong. So we have a relationship where I don't hide things from her, and she don't have to be ashamed of what she has going on, because reality is what we gonna live in if I can help it. So I know that the conversation that we have now are very direct and forward. And I need that, because you think about the kids now and you see all these complaints that people have about the children. All these kids these days, these kids ain't nowhere near as fucked up as we was. Not in my opinion. I know my child is a much better human being than I was at 12 years old. I was wild as shit, all over the place, doing all types of stuff, pre-surveillance. So you know we was turning up extra hard. But these kids now are living the opposite. They are living in a world that doesn't really exist, but it's way more real to them than some of the stuff that we actually went through outside. So I got to let her know that I'm not afraid to let her navigate the things that are her for her. That's a lot of mistakes that I think parents make. They think they have control over things that's years out of your control. Like, you're not hip to the stuff that's going on, like your kids are hip to it. So if you try to make yourself believe that, then you're going to be in for a rude awakening when you find out all of the shit that they are capable of doing in this day and age that you had no idea, i.e. what we used to do when we was young. We ain't know. I've been cussing since I was, probably in first grade. But I still don't cuss around my mother because I don't know how she gonna react to that. She might just punch me in my face. But I still knew not to do it in front of her. But whenever I wasn't around her, I was like, fuck that shit, bitch, man. Said, yeah, motherfucker. So it's no different. Now, I'm not mad at my mama for not allowing me to cuss around her, and I don't allow my daughter to cuss around me. But that's just because that's something that I was taught, and that's one of those lessons that, you know, certain things that your parents give you, you hold on to. And that's just a level of, you know, respect. But if she get to a point where she starts to feel like she want to, we can have a conversation about that. Like, daddy, I want to say fuck real bad. All right. And I don't know if you're going to get it, if I'm going to get in trouble for it. So are we there yet? Then we're going to be able to talk about that, because I know that whatever it is she comes to me with is something I need to learn. And I need to let her take the lead on the things that she's supposed to take the lead on and be her support system. Like the internet, I'd sit down with her for hours and just let her show me all the little stuff that they got going on. And Lord, man, they got a app that I can't think of the logo, but it's like a logo that it just looks inconspicuous. But you open it up, they got you can put all the messages from Snapchat that go directly there, and Facebook, and you can put pictures and all types of stuff. And I'm like, damn, but I would have never known this existed if it wasn't for her showing me. But if I made her feel uncomfortable enough to want to hide everything, then I would never know until it's too late. Until one day I'm happening to go through the phone, her mama go through the phone and hit that on accident, and then boom, you know what I'm saying? So,
man, this conversation is so good, man. But I ain't gonna lie, man. I need a little advice from both of y'all, right? So Matthew's heard this before. Is my dad? I started this platform because my dad wasn't around, right? My dad has been reaching out to me lately. I haven't answered the phone. And I know Matthew just a year, maybe. What is it, Matthew?
About a year or two ago, yeah.
Year or two ago, you reconnected with your dad. It's something I got on my mind that I want to do. And Chico, you said, you know, if you got that opportunity to do so, you should do it. Here's my thing. All right, so hear me out, y'all. So here's my thing. So my dad was involved in some probably street, you know, things in St. Louis. And he's paralyzed from the waist down, which also has affected his vocal cords. So I can't really understand. So he calls me sometimes and he leaves me voicemail. But I can't understand what he's saying. So me, I feel like it's going to be hard for me to have just a conversation with him because I can't necessarily understand exactly what he's saying. I want to, but it's like, that's what's holding me back, because I feel like we can't have a in-depth conversation from man or in a man-to-man atmosphere because of that reason. So y'all,
nah, man, you got to do that shit and teach him how to text if you don't know how to text. You know, it's one of those things where, hey, you know, I know. Just granted, what you just told us, man, maybe the verbal part, you know, isn't necessarily the clearest, but man, we got too many options on how to communicate, man. You know, but I'll go on and on about that. Chico, I'm going to let you have the room on that.
Yeah, man. You know, one thing I like to tell guys like yourself, whenever I have anybody I had this conversation with, but especially us, black men, you don't understand what it's like to be one till you are one. So I'm sure a lot of the things that just us talking now, a lot of the things that you probably didn't understand that you heard about your dad or that you may have felt about your dad, now that you're a grown man, you get it now, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. It come full circle.
Exactly. So when you know that and you know what it takes to be one of us out here, man, don't nothing else matter, G. Before he leave his plane, no matter what the communication style is, man, y'all, you got to do that for you, because the way the circle of life works is you supposed to bury your parents. And one day that's going to happen. A lot of people, a lot of us, bro, we like to negate the realities of life. And the reality of life is that it's going to end one day. Everybody, the ultimate outcome has already been determined for you. I say this all the time. You got a date at the beginning. You got a date that is going to be the end. That dash in the middle, that's on you. That's, you required to fill that up with as much happiness and dope shit as you can. But that date at the beginning, without that person, you wouldn't have got that option. So from that alone, he deserved at least a conversation. Because yeah, he wanted to fuck that night, and your mama did too. And I like to break it down on ground level like that. Like, because they wanted to do that night, you came. And now you are able to live a life and be here and have a podcast and make decisions and fuck yourself. And I mean, not yourself, but you know, I mean, all the good stuff that you do, that you able to do, all that is a result of the decision that he made that night with your mama. So if you break it down to the simplistic form, you should be like, man, I got to have a conversation with this dude. You know what I'm saying? It'd be like if you created something that can talk and walk and do all these things, no matter what happened, that should be a conversation that you should want to have. And him reaching out means that he does. And no matter what the pitfalls y'all may have had, you understand now, man, it's tough being a nigga out here, man. Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah, man.
It's hard, bro. It's hard. And I understand now a lot more of why dudes walk away. You know what I'm saying? And I ain't excusing it at all, because that's some sucker shit. But I get it. You know what I'm saying? I get it. I can understand it. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of stuff that I understand that I don't agree with. But if you can understand it, then the conversation can be had.
Nah, that's real.
Yeah, man.
And I appreciate that from both of y'all, because it's something I've been going back and forth with in my head. I want to have a conversation, but just trying to figure out how to have it. But I'm going to definitely make that happen before the
year. Yeah, and that's, you got to, you know, just you. Hopefully you got more time than you don't. But at the same time, you know what I mean? You got the right to get yourself together and all of that, because it's really not your responsibility to make that happen. He's the elder, and he's supposed to do that and put whatever effort he's supposed to put in to make it happen. But at a certain time, you know what I mean, those opportunities start to run a little shorter for the elder than they do for you. So if he's making the attempts, then you give yourself, you know, do your thing, man. Holler at your pop, man. I'm sure that it's going to be a level of peace for him that he need. And I guarantee it's going to be a level of peace for you that you definitely going to need moving forward.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I appreciate that. I don't mean to make this a therapy session for myself, but sometimes I tend to do that, man. But
He's going to DM you the invoice.
Nah, you good, man. That's what it's about, man.
Yes, sir.
This is, I'm all for this. You know, us as black men building together, this shit used to be illegal. You know what I'm saying? Like, literally. Yeah. It used to be illegal for niggas to build. Like, nigga, you niggas is reading and saying words. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so, like I said, I'm a ground level dude, man. I like to look at everything from the most simplistic, realistic aspect. No matter how nasty or tough it may be, then give it to me straight. No chaser. Because that's the way I'm going to have to deal. I like to deal with it. I've been taught to attack things head on. If I got any type of thing going, I'm going straight at it. Ain't no plan. We ain't got time for that. Because the more you let shit linger, you know what I mean? It's going to get stronger and stronger. It's like, if you don't attack it immediately, it's just, I like to compare it to passing gas, farting. That's why I claim all my farts. I swear to God, like I said, it's simplistic, but I claim all my, hey man, I just fought it. Because that process, when you smell it and everybody looking around, and who did that? And who did, it just make it last way longer than it need to. Hey man, I just bust off. You might want to walk over there. Let's get it all the way. Just don't bullshit, because the bullshit causes much more of a problem than just getting it on out the way.
Right. Now I feel that wholeheartedly, man. And even just, you know, thinking about just your path as a father, I want to take it back a little bit to when you initially found out that you, Chico Bean, I don't know if you was going by this at the time. What's your kid?
I was just 12.
So what was those thoughts when you first found out you was becoming a dad, like mentally and emotionally, man? Like, how were you feeling?
Like, it's crazy because my process was different. Like, I wasn't present during my daughter's pregnancy. Me and my daughter's mom wasn't even speaking to each other. I didn't know what the deal was, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't actually see her for the first time until she was 3 months old. But literally, when I walked in and seen her in her little bassinet thing rocking back and forth and seen my face, I was like, oh shit, I got a baby. It was like, it was just, like I said, it's just always been like that for me. Like I said, I don't never really get to you know, sugarcoat nothing. It always is straight on. And I looked at that little baby sleep rocking back and forth with my whole face on her. And then it's crazy because, like I said, me and my daughter mom hadn't been talking up until that point. But you know, we met when we was 18 and freshman in college. So we know each other and we just went through that period. And when she walked past and seen me standing there looking at her, she just being the type of person that she is, she stopped and was looked in the room and was like, yeah, all you, right? And walked off. I was like, damn, it's on. And from that moment, I remember I called my mom because we, like I said, I was like, I don't know, mama. Because we ain't been communicating out, and it was so crazy when it stopped. I'm like, I don't know. My mama called me and was like, well, I'm like, don't even finish. Yes, yes, this is my child. You are grandmother. You grandma now. She's like, okay, because this little baby, she looked just like, I don't know if you ever seen my daughter, but she looks exactly like me. So,
all right, come on, copy and paste.
I mean, all the way. So I was like, it's on, and I done been there ever since that day. You know what I'm saying? And like, I never ran from reality. Responsibility or reality. And I think that's what causes a lot of us as black men to abandon those situations, is because reality makes our reality makes that responsibility so tough. You know what I mean? Like, responsibility, when your reality is in good standing and good shape, responsibility don't really mean that much. You know what I'm saying? You take it on. You'll take on other people's responsibility. But when yours is in disarray and in shambles, the responsibility of taking care of yourself is overwhelming. Then you think, I got to take care of me, and I can't even figure out how to get me in order. Now I got to be responsible for this person too. It's easy to run away from that. And then you got situations where you got this responsibility and you don't even like the person that you created it with. And it's so many factors that go into it. So that's what makes me understand, but I've been blessed that no matter what my reality is, I'm dealing with my responsibilities in whatever space. So that's why I thank my parents and my uncles and everything. They instilled these things in me. So the moment I saw my baby, I was like, well, it's on. And it's been on ever since, man.
Yeah, and even just tapping into that a little bit more, man. Like, I know, and based on what you're saying, in those type of situations, sometimes there's hurdles, there's obstacles, or whatever the case may be. As a father, also balancing being this public figure, comedian, actor, what's been your biggest hurdle balancing the two, and how did you overcome that hurdle?
Like I said, my daughter, man, she makes the biggest sacrifice in what I do, and it's for the better, it's for the greater good, you know what I mean? And she understands that, and she understands her daddy's not a regular person and all of those type of things, but she's been understood that, because when I first got my career started, I was able to be there all the time. And she gets it, but I always try to make sure that I showed her the result of what it is that I'm out here doing. Like, we weren't able to do it this year. We just celebrated her birthday this year. It was just me and her in the house, and it still was amazing. But for the past 5 years, I've taken her and her friends on a birthday trip. Like, we started out going to this place in North Carolina called Wolf. I can't think of the name of it right now. It's like a little amusement park. And then we went to Miami. I took them to Disneyland, you know what I mean? And I not only take her, but I take her friends too, to show her, you know, one, that you're blessed. This is why daddy is gone all the time. And to show her some of the responsibility that comes with having someone like myself as her father. Because this is going to be your responsibility at one point. And all that I build and all that I do is going to end up being yours, God willing. So you're going to have a different level of responsibility too. So I want you to, you know, this is your trip, but you got to learn how to, you know, share and be a person that is giving. And I wanted to make sure that I did that, not only for her, but for the people around her too, because you know, this is important, and they remember these things for the rest of their life. These are the moments that they're going to remember for the rest of their life. So I tried to make those as grandiose as possible to make up for all of the time that I missed in the day-to-day. And that's why I give her mother the credit that I give her mother, man. A lot of us need to, you know, as black men, got to respect the, you know, things that they do on a day-to-day basis on their time. You know what I mean? That although we out here in the world trying to make it happen, she the one that got to make sure the shoes is on the right feet and they tied up, and no matter if she got a headache or if she got a stomach ache, it's mommy, mommy, mommy. And she got to make sure that the day-to-day things are done and keep your child in order and safe while you out here doing whatever you need to do to make the steak and potatoes be on the table. So I give her the credit for doing that on a day-to-day. But whenever I could, I always tried to make sure that she got, you know, a reflection of all the work that I put in, you know what I'm saying? So that's really how I balanced it before. And getting this year to be able to do all that I've been able to do with her on a day-to-day on my side now has been even more. So this was necessary and important. So as crazy as the coronavirus and the shutdown has been for my career, being able to have those moments let me know that, okay, this was just a shift, you know what I mean? And the world does that sometimes. The universe does that sometimes. It shifts. So for me to be able to have them moments with her during the shift, when I get back to whatever the normal is going to be when this shit turns into what it's going to turn into, you know, our relationship will be even more solid moving forward.
Yeah, man. And I'm just thinking about taking all that into consideration, man. It's not about, you know, what you do or what you wish you would have done. It's about what you do when you have the time to do it. And I feel like when I think about COVID and all that, man, it's just a big reset button. And it's one of those things where us as fathers, you know, we're always trying to build those relationships. We're always trying to make sure that we do the best that we can before we go and get busy like yourself or whatever we got going on in the day to day. So you mentioned earlier, of course, you know, your father, you know, died earlier on in your life, and your uncle was kind of like that father figure. So normally I would ask, what's your relationship like your father? But in this case, what was your relationship like your father figures, and what kind of impact did that have on you?
Oh, man, these dudes were, you know, the most legendary dudes on the planet to me. Some of the greatest dudes to ever walk the earth in my eyes, you know what I mean? Solid in every way, shape, or form. And they took the responsibility that wasn't theirs. And that's one of the things that I respect the most. It was none of their responsibility to teach me how to be a man or to embrace me and you know, show me the things and the ups and downs and pitfalls of being a man, but they did. And these guys were all, you know, most of them are in the street, you know what I mean? Real live guys. So I got a lot of lessons early. And, you know, it was never no cut put on nothing in my house. Like, the Bean household was different. Wasn't no cut cards and no nepotism. We keep it real around here. Care how you feel about nothing. This what's up. This what it is. And getting those lessons it was certain times where it was tough, you know what I mean? Because you want to be a kid in certain situations, you know what I mean? Like, I remember one time I was riding my bike outside and my uncle pulled me to the side and sat me down and made me sit there and listen to him talk for an hour. But I remember that conversation like it was yesterday, and all of those things, a lot of those things that he told me in them conversations, man, I thank God every day for it, because I'm like, oh, this is what this nigga was talking about. Like, he was giving me these things before I needed them. And although I just wanted to ride my bike up and down the street, like, look, nigga, this is what it is. And this, if I can take this experience that I'm going through and save you from it, then you're going to get this. And everything was different. Like, for example, I know how to remember words of songs real good. And the reason why, big reason why, is because my uncle used to make me learn Twista songs as punishment. Like, all right, look, nigga, if you can learn this whole song by the time I get back, you can go outside. If not, you know what? You can still, I'm going to beat your ass because you act, walk around here acting like you're a grown man. But I still let you go outside. You can learn this song and not get an ass whooping and go outside, or you can get this ass whooping, go outside with the ass whooping. It's on you. So at that point, I'm just thinking, like, why do I have to do? Because it was difficult at then, but now as a grown man, I'm like, dude, that turned into a skill that I can utilize in my career. And I wasn't thinking it was going to be that then, but just because I have it, I can pull from it. So that's what they gave me, a big wealth bank of information and stuff to pull from should I ever need to. And I thank God every day for them guys, man.
Well, shoot, man, I feel like you're gonna preview us at least with this next question I'm about to ask you, man. It's just one of those things where, you know, Jesse was saying earlier, man, just thank you for all the gems that you've been dropping, man. And I know we could go on and on about this, man, but we reaching this point in our conversation, in our segment, to where we normally ask all of our guests to kind of write a letter to their father. In your case, your father figures. So if you could write a letter or say something to your father figures and make it start with "Dear Father Figures," what would that say and how would that go?
Dear Father Figures, every single day that I am blessed to wake up, I will be an example of everything that you've given me to be the best version of myself that I can be. And I thank God and y'all every single day for that. The end.
For sure, man. We appreciate that so much. Just because we feel like as black men, man, it's hard. I mean, we're taught to not open up, not to be vulnerable, not to show emotion. So that letter to your father figures or your father, whatever the case may be, is always super impactful. Even before we get out of here, man, you wrote the letter to your father. I know you said you don't like, you know, being asked what's next. So we're not going to ask that, but like.
No, it's not that I don't like being asked. You can ask. It's just people don't like to ask.
What's next?
What you got going on right now? Like, that we want
to. Man, we working, man. You know what I'm saying? We working. We putting together a whole bunch of stuff, man. So when people ask me what's next, I say everything, man. Everything that's next is next.
No, and that's cool, man. And, you know, we definitely are tapping to whatever you got going on because, you know, we just appreciate who you are as a person, who you are as a black man, who you are as a father.
We appreciate you.
And just appreciate you jumping on with us today, man. It's been a great conversation. Gems, real stuff. We talk music, which I love. And we talked about a lot, man. So I just appreciate you for taking the time today, man, to join us.
You already know what it is, man. It's your boy Chico Bean, and I am rocking with the Dear Fathers podcast, man. Make sure you do the same.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Dear Fathers podcast. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to our show on the platform of your choice. Follow us on Instagram at dear.fathers and check out our website, dearfathers.com, for more content. This is Matthew Kirby, and I'm signing out. Now let's get back to the fatherhood journey. Peace.
Real. Time is money and I'm working on that richer meal. It's up to me to drop the ball like I'm center field. I gotta touch lead better when I'm in the clip. I be in and out the cut like I'm Emmitt Smith. They tried to get